Hello! So just like that, we are back at it again. I hope you are having a wonderful day. How are you? How are you? How are you? How are you? How's everybody? Where are you tuning from? How's your day going? Are you relaxing? Are you having a cup of tea? Are you having a glass of wine? What are you busy with? Whenever I tune in, I always imagine literally this invisible, you know, connection that just spreads throughout the world in terms of anybody else who could be listening and what they're doing, where they're sitting. I listen to my podcast quite a lot when I'm driving, so I always imagine that some people are doing that, but perhaps not. Some people like to listen to their podcast just before bedtime. So I'm wondering what are you busy with? What are you busy with? What did you have for lunch? What are you having for supper? What are your plans today? Today, our plans is we are chatting to Shazia Adams. She is a fashion designer based in Mozambique. I'm obsessed with her. I met Shazia a while back at South African Fashion Week. I have used some of her garments to style some of the fashion covers that I used to be involved in when I was based with the publication. So I can attest to her craftsmanship and how talented she is. Just gorgeous, just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous work. And she designs wedding gowns. So if there's one person who knows how COVID has interrupted weddings, is Shazia, because literally once COVID hit, her business had to reshuffle and re-strategize and pivot, as they say. But you know, she is so talented that for her, even though I, you know, she would probably say no, that's not the case, but for her, I think it was easy to you know, come up with something else, not come up, but like re-strategize and reposition the brand. Because just when you're talented, sometimes these things is just easier, right? So today we're chatting about her sustainable brand called Mina, that is a sister brand to Shazia Adams. And I'm excited to hear all about it. She's really looking forward to it growing and making an impact in the space, because I think all of us, we're trying to find ways in how we can, you know, just make an impact in the little ways wherever you you occupy space. So yeah, so we started the interview with us chatting about her, how she organizes herself between being the CEO of a brand and between that and family. We started chatting about that. So enjoy.
And having your life organized. So I always have my schedule on me. I work with Google Calendar, so I have time for everything. I most recently started giving myself at least half a morning off work during the week.
That's nice.
I'm trying not to work on Saturdays, which sometimes it's impossible.
Yeah.
Because now we have two brands. We have the Haute Couture, which you've seen in South Africa Fashion Week. And most recently, last year when COVID started, it did affect my Haute Couture brand. So what I did was I actually took 2 weeks off to really rethink what are my next steps forward. So and at the end of the day, I launched Mina, which in Shangan means me, which is a sustainable brand. And it's all, we're working with digital platforms like Instagram. So it just started like that. And it's working really well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
But juggling my personal life and work, it's really hard, especially in the fashion industry, which we know that it's really time consuming. You need to always be on your A game. But I try to create a routine. I work out. I have time to work out. I also organize my house, organize lunch. But yeah, We have everything under control, but it gets to a point after 6 months of living this constant routine, you
lot.
Get to a point where you're like, I need a holiday.
Yeah.
But it's hard to also take some time off from business.
Yeah. No, I think we all due for a serious holiday. I was saying to my friends, I'm like, I'm due for a holiday and all I want is everything 5-star. Like, nobody should judge me and I don't want to feel guilty. I just want, and I'm like, I want my own room. I'm done with this whole, oh, it's a girls' party. No, I want my own room.
No, I need my time. Yes. So even now, with this, now that we're on our third wave here in Mozambique, I really feel the need that I need to reinvent myself again.
Mm.
I need something new. So I've been looking up courses that I can just upgrade my knowledge a bit.
Yeah, it's always good. Yeah.
Studying a bit more. Yeah.
And so let's talk about then the couture brand, the Shazia Adam one. How,
yes,
it was it initially meant to be, for me, how I'm interpreting it is that was it initially meant to be like a bridal, you know, high occasion
the
brand?
Adam couture brand is a bridal brand. We're very specialized in our bridal section. We also create other kinds of gowns, but now I'm actually thinking about creating small capsule collections for the couture brand. So people have something ready-made that is intricate, that there's embroidery, like nice, intricate pieces, but small quantities, because it's all about, you know, with the sustainability and this factor that's been roaming around, sustainability and fashion. There's no point in creating such big collections that then it just sits there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people need to wear it.
Yeah.
And it needs to have a long-term life.
Yeah.
So it's all about that
for
me right now.
Yeah,
so
and
I'm
that's...
taking my future brand as something that, yes, we're specialized in bridal wear, which we only work by consultation. But future-wise, I'm planning on creating, for each season, we're going to create 3 dresses that we're going to share on our Instagram, on our website, and people have an idea of what the trend is for that season, but also create a small capsule collection. I would say 2 capsule collections per year, small, of only 8 looks, and leave it there, you know? And the rest, we make it by order.
Yeah. No, and that's what I wanted to ask you about, you know, for the Shazia brand, like it must have been very tricky to try and balance the sustainability element into it, because I think the birth of it was not necessarily intended, you know, or it was not designed on that front. But I mean, it's still beautiful and we're still going to get to a time where we want to all dress up and look good. Weddings are definitely coming back. So it's tricky, you know?
It is very tricky, especially to the couture side. Mm. So I'm not going to say that my couture brand is highly sustainable. It's not, because we use a lot of pearls, beadworks, laces, and this is not something, and it's very expensive. So I wouldn't say it's something highly sustainable, but that's the direction I'm trying to take is I'm going to produce less bigger collections. You know, instead of creating a collection that is 25 looks, I'm going to create smaller collections. And from there, clients can see and we can produce what they want according to their measurements.
Mm.
So my bridal section, basically clients book a consultation with me. I sit with them, I analyze their profile, what they're looking for, what's the concept of the wedding. And then I sketch 3 designs for them. And then we choose and I produce.
Yeah, I mean, your bridal gowns are beautiful. They're really, really beautiful. And I'm not just saying that. I literally had the opportunity of styling with few garments and they are just breathtaking. They are just so modern. Like, they're literally modern dresses, you know? So beautiful. So do you feel that all brands should be sustainable? And I'm asking this because you have both of each, right? You have one that is not like really sustainable, and you have one that is now you're appreciating the process on the other side. Do you think all brands should be or shouldn't be?
I'm not the one to say that brands should entirely be sustainable. Mm. Yes, it's the right direction to take. It's what I did with my MENA brand, which is my ready-to-wear brand. Mm. But it's quite hard for us. We're in Africa. Yes, we do have nice resources. Like here in Mozambique, I started making bags in Pala. Mm. I'll even send you some images. We also have on our Instagram page. And it's tie-dyed. It's dyed with the skin of the African potato. So we have black pala.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And it's done by women in Inyamban. Mm. So there is a possibility of being sustainable. But my question is, and to what extent can we have a brand that is 100% sustainable?
Yeah.
You know, because at least for us in Mozambique, it's very hard to get all the raw materials to produce a collection.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I have to get my stuff from South Africa. But it is a good direction to take, because the fashion industry is one of the most polluting industries in the world.
Currently,
and it affects the environment, the water, everything.
Mm.
But yes, we should be more conscious. And this is what I did last year. I had a collection in linen that I had some items just sitting around in stock. And I was like, you know what? People, the association of this COVID, they're saying that we need cotton masks and it needs to have, the filter needs to be in cotton. So I started looking at my linen and I'm like, you know what? Let me just deconstruct all these garments and start making linen masks. Yes. And right now, we're actually exporting linen masks to Portugal.
Oh, wow.
Our brand is I only make linen masks.
Wow.
In different colors, the embroidery. Yeah, on some of them we customize. We even sent it to Swaziland, all with lace, beads. We make all kinds of masks, but in linen. So it's all in natural fibers.
Yeah, natural
fibers.
This is
what our MENA brand is all about.
Yeah.
It's a ready-to-wear brand, which is sustainable, it's sophisticated, it's elegant, but yet again, it has a long, long time span.
Yeah.
It has a long life.
Yeah.
Because we make garments in linen, in jersey. I have silks from Vietnam, pure silk.
Yeah.
So it's really, and we don't mass produce.
Yeah.
We don't mass produce. Let's say our market is very small in Maputo. I would say I'll produce two of each size. And then if it's out of stock and you want to order, you place an order and you make it to your size.
Mm.
But we don't produce to just sit with stock, because then it's going to affect the environment. We're going to have to throw it away eventually.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's what I was, well, that's going to be my next question in terms of the MENA as a brand, in terms of, you've spoken about how, you know, the inspiration behind it, but what I wanted to know is that then, was it difficult then to come up with styles in terms of, you know, it's always good to have an inspiration and be like, okay, fine, let's just introduce another brand. And maybe you're thinking about one or two pieces that conspire the line, but, and then you're just like, okay, then what? That what are we doing? Are we doing leisure? Are we doing, you know, easy to wear? What? So how did you get to that space?
So what I did was, during those 2 weeks that I just sat at home, we were confined at home, and I was like, what am I going to do with my business? I came up with MENA. I actually built a small business plan, and I tried to really think, what is happening around me? I went online, I was studying fashion, I went to read on fashion business, and what I got to the conclusion is, people are sitting at home, they're having meetings at home, our life is more confined, and people need more simpler clothes and ready day to wear clothes. People want to be more comfortable.
Comfort.
Right?
Yeah.
So from there, I started thinking, okay, I'm going to create leisure wear. I'm going to create easy to wear clothes.
Yeah. Just basically like loungy. Yes. Yeah.
Lounge wear, but stuff that you can wear at home. You can either dress it up or dress it down.
Mm.
And it's all about the accessories you use with it.
Mm.
So I consume my MENA brand. I actually shop in my brand.
Mm.
Because it's all, every item I create in MENA, I fit it.
Mm.
I have a fitting day where I try it on and I see how it looks, how it can be styled. And this is what we show on our Instagram page. How can you style this one kimono or this one dress in different ways? How can you wear this shorts in different ways? You can either wear it in the beach, you can wear it at home, you can wear it in a braai at your house, you can wear it to go to the mall, You can wear it with heels, sneakers, or slippers.
Yeah.
So it's a brand that it's multifunctional.
Yeah.
And you don't feel stuck with one item. And this is what I realized when I was confined at home last year. I was like, my closet is full of clothes, but where am I going to wear it now?
Yeah. I think that's, we're all stuck with that. Like, they just, stuff is just sitting.
Where am I going to wear?
Yeah.
Exactly. So basically thinking about the material and the design, because the material counts a lot. Where is the, does this material fit? And I think linen goes with anything.
Yeah.
Cotton jersey goes with anything. You have this pantaloon trousers, wide leg trousers,
yeah,
and jersey, and a nice crop top, long sleeves. You can,
yeah,
even wear it with sneakers, slippers. You wear it with a nice bag or heels, and you're out.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I love that. I love the...
about women, you know,
yeah,
how our body, because I'm also a mom, I'm on my 30s, so I really, this brand was really, I reinvented myself. It's about how can a woman this age or older or slightly younger feel under, like, you don't lose your sex appeal,
yeah,
but you also look appropriate, you know. It's about everything, and this is what my clientele is liking about it.
I love that, Shazia. No, I love the functionality of it. And it sounds like how you're designing it, it's already, you're already deciding for a woman, like helping a woman rather, in how they,
yes,
can wear a particular garment. And I think that's the future of fashion, because most garments are just there on the rail. And then you have to take it home and start figuring out how else can I, and you wear it,
yeah,
once and
the
you're
worst
done.
Thing for, exactly. And the worst thing for me is I'm a mom, I breastfed. You know, some of your assets are not in place. So I also think about, okay, I'm going to do something that maybe you don't need to wear a bra, but I create some structure inside,
yeah,
so you feel good that,
yes,
you can even have an open back,
yes,
right? So it's all thought about the small details of a woman's, about our,
yes,
our insecurities as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, that is so true. Especially those kind of dresses where you just don't want to wear a bra, but like nature is not allowing you to just walk around like that.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
And I feel that. And this is, for me as a designer, it's very important to actually find solutions for our clients.
Mm. And so,
yeah,
let's talk about working between SA and Moz. How do you, like, I know with COVID now, probably you don't like travel much, like, you know, everybody else.
No.
But how did you manage, you know, the two cities? Because I remember there was a time where your stock was this side, for the Shazia,
yeah,
particularly. How did you manage that? And when, what was the inspiration of wanting to tap into this market as well?
So I'm actually half South African.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Oh, wow.
But my parents are from here in Maputo. My grandparents were in South Africa. And basically, I've always loved South Africa. And I felt that the market in South Africa, I think people in South Africa really understand fashion. I think the market, the fashion market in South Africa is really developing very well. I studied in London, and I look at the market in South Africa as something that I would bet on it. I would really like to have my brand, even the MENA brand, really selling on that side. So for me, it was a great experience being part of the South Africa Fashion Week and how people really took the brand. They really liked it. And it's something that possibly, due to now with the MENA, I'm launching my website. And I really want to get to sell to South Africa. But future-wise, I want to really get myself selling properly on that side.
Oh, wow. So with MENA, then can we shop from South Africa? Do you deliver worldwide? Or?
Yes, I deliver worldwide. Now we have an agreement with DHL. And basically, we're working through Instagram. You can shop on Instagram. We send our banking details. You transfer and we post it to you. However, I'm already working on our website, which will make things much easier for our clients with PayPal and with MasterCards and Visa cards. And we're going to post worldwide. We've had clients from California, Florida, Miami, clients in Cabo Delgado, so everywhere.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's nice. And another one that I wanted to chat about, Shazia, particularly now with COVID, how would you then advise a fashion student, like someone who wants to, you know, study fashion design? Because I feel like personally, and the reason why I wanted to ask you that is because I think fashion design has changed. You know, I think there's so many things that a student has to take into account. It's no longer just about sketching and, you know, you produce beautiful garments. It's a whole lot more.
So I'm going to explain from my experience. When I went to study fashion, my course was really amazing in London. I learned a lot. I managed to intern in Alexander McQueen. Mm. So you are exposed to all this. However, fashion design is not only about sketching. Mm. It's not only about creating beautiful garments. It's about having a business mind and really an understanding, where am I taking my brand? Mm. What am I going to create that is going to bring me an income? And what is the lifespan that I want for my brand? Because you can't just study fashion and think that, I'm just going to design and people are going to shop my ideas. No, you really need to understand the market you're going to be into. You really need to understand what is happening to that market. What is the consumer behavior? And this is what I really used last year with COVID. For me to launch Mina, I really went to analyze consumer behavior. And it's all about that. You really need to understand, what are the people looking for? What are they shopping? What do they like? What can I bring that is different? For instance, I launched the masks last year in linen, but I'm tired of the mask with the stitch in the front. So I actually I have a sample. I'm going to launch it in 2 weeks, the new mask for my couture brand. And it's completely different. But that's the thing. You need to reinvent yourself. You need to be up to date. You need to understand consumer behavior.
Yeah.
So if the young people who want to study fashion, you need to be ready for this, because the fashion industry is a hectic industry, and you really need to be on your A game all the time.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And be determined. You need to be very determined of what you want.
Yeah, no, and I think after COVID, I think the industry would have been like massively, like literally have changed, you know. I don't think we would be even doing, so many areas would have been impacted and would have learned from it, and now there would be like this huge shift, you know, particularly with distribution of garments. You know, I think that has taught us that how we used to distribute is just doesn't work, because things stop now with COVID, you know.
Yeah. And you notice that mass producing companies cannot produce as much garments, because people are not consuming as much.
Yeah.
People are more aware now of how they spend their money.
Yeah.
That is one of the biggest factors. And also, to be a sustainable brand, we need to be aware that sustainable garments are slightly more expensive than mass produced garments. It is. But on the other hand, you have garments that last you longer, that can be reused in other ways. So you have to be very smart about how you shop and what you create.
I mean, are you for the school of thought that thinks that maybe it's better to just buy normal garments and just keep them for longer? Or you feel that you should be buying more sustainable fabric textures and rather spend your money there? Because again, with the whole fact about it being expensive, you know, people are turned off by the idea, why buy an expensive garment when you have an option of buying a cheaper one? So I would rather buy the cheaper one and wear that for longer. Like,
but then
I don't know.
Again, you have the factor that when you buy the cheaper one, you also have the factor that, is it a good quality material? Is it really going to last you as long as a sustainable brand one? Because if it does, for instance, I'm going to say, like, t-shirts, basic cotton t-shirts, it's fine for you to get it, you know, and it does last you longer.
It does.
So yeah, why not shop it? But that's the thing, but you're shopping consciously. At the moment you're shopping consciously, you're already on the route of being sustainable.
Yeah.
You're going to think, okay, I'm going to buy a black t-shirt, a white t-shirt. It's something I'm always going to wear.
Yeah.
So it is a sustainable move. It's going to last you longer. It goes, you can mix and match it with many other garments. So it's basically about your conscious, how you're going to shop. If it's a sustainable garment or if it's not a sustainable garment, it can be something from Mr. Price, which is mass produced, but you're conscious that I'm buying something that is going to last me longer. You need to be aware of what material you're buying.
Yeah, it's just always so tricky, you know? And I guess the you're so right, because I think the idea is not to judge, you know, the idea is for everybody to apply their own situation.
Yeah, everyone has a wallet full of money that can buy, you know, pineapple leather bags or pineapple leather jackets. However, if you already take a step with your budget of trying to consume less, but stuff that you can really wear, things that you know that, okay, this is going to last me 3 to 6 months and I'm going to wear it in different ways. Perfect.
So then let's wrap up Mina. So Mina, if what kind of woman is Mina? Like, you know, if somebody wants to shop Mina, what kind of woman is Mina?
Mina, so the slogan for Mina is me. And I am a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So because fashion for me it's a way of life.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
So basically Mina is someone that she works, you know, she has a busy life. She likes to look good. She's stylish, she's trendy, but she also has a busy life. So you don't have time to always go home and change and then go out for a coffee or, you know, so whatever you wear from Mina, it's possible that you can dress it up or down with whatever you have at home, like a bag, you can change your shoes in the car. So she's a busy woman. And she's also a mom. She can be a mom or might not be a mom, but she understands fashion.
Yeah.
She wants to look trendy. She wants to look cute, but in a very sophisticated and elegant way.
Yeah, I get you. And then style tips. So... I think for someone like you who designed, particularly I'm obsessed with Shazia Adam, like style tips that last a woman for a lifetime, like just things that you can just share with our audience in terms of what are some of, and I don't want like those oldies, you know, I mean, I guess they still apply, but just like modern, like style tips that we should just be aware of when you're shopping or when you're dressing, or some of the clothes, like clothes that are still in your wardrobe, particularly now that COVID has kind of like reshuffled all of us.
Yeah. So for me, when I am going to dress, I'm all about having at least high-waisted black trousers. Mm. That's something you need to have. Because they, for instance, I'm actually wearing ones today. I really like my crop tops. It looks nice with my black-waisted tight trousers. Because you can wear it with sneakers, you can wear it with heels. For me, there's something that never misses in my closet is something black. I always have a black item.
Yeah.
It's one of my...
I agree. Would you say black is a much more sustainable color than like yellow? You know, because sometimes I play around with the whole idea of which color is more sustainable.
I would say black.
Yeah.
Because I can wear black at least 4 times a week or 5.
Yeah.
That's serious it is.
Yeah,
because it's something you wear, you match it with anything, and it goes. It just goes with anything you have. I have a nice black skirt that we redesigned it. So we actually had some stock sitting around, and I just thought, okay, maybe I'm going to cut out all the waist to the bottom, the skirt part of the dresses. And I made one skirt, a 3-tier skirt, from 3 dresses. We actually reconstructed something that existed, and we made it a new item. This is already being sustainable. It's circular fashion. So this skirt, I wear it with a black t-shirt, I can wear it with a white t-shirt, I can wear it with a shirt, I can wear it with a crop. So it's all about having that basic items in your closet that you know that will match with anything else that you have.
Yeah. Okay. And then Shazia, you talk a lot about like some of the stuff that you still have in stock. Some of the stuff, you know, you're pulling the mask, you're remaking the masks. How are you managing like fabric waste?
That's what we do. So we basically have very little fabric waste, because even from couture garments that we produce, from that we start reproducing masks for brides. So we basically, if you order a dress with us, you don't pay for the mask, we just give you a mask. You know, it's a gift. Exactly. For the brides, for the couture garment, I actually store all the waste of fabrics in our atelier, and there every Friday I sit with my assistant and we choose what can be done from it you know. I'm actually considering to create a new line, which is still a secret, but I'm going to share it with you. I want to get into kidswear, because when we produce items for Mina, there's a lot of linen left. So we're actually going to start making some basic stuff for kids.
I think that is such a brilliant idea. Like, literally, yes. Like, it's such a brilliant idea, because I think moms are getting to a point where we just don't know where to shop anymore. Like there's just not enough kiddies prints.
There, imagine us on this side.
Yeah.
So basically, we're really focusing on having zero waste in our company.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it's going to do so well. I think people are always looking for just like fresh ideas for kiddies clothes, you know? There's just not. You would assume, I mean, I think because from the infancy stage, there's so much. But I think once kids hit, I don't know, 3 years of age, 3 years old, 4, 5, 6, I think it starts disappearing.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no styles, so, there's no shops, you know?
No, it's all basic, yeah.
Well, that's nice. That's nice. And just to wrap it up.
What we do, we also make headbands. We start creating accessories indoors with the material that is left from the garments. And we start creating accessories. So it's always, you should always try to be creative and reinvent.
Yeah, yeah. Shazia, just in closing, I wanted to do, I have something called the COVID checklist that I normally do with my guests. And I wanted to find out, okay, during COVID, this is last year, March, April, when everybody was in hectic lockdown. What was your favorite snack? Like, what did you eat mostly at home?
Oh my God. I am the person, I'm like a foodie. Jesus, okay, what was my favorite snack during COVID? I eat everything.
Everything, okay, favorite snack, everything, done.
I love blueberries, so I'd always have my yogurt pot, I'd put blueberries, banana chips, everything in there.
Oh, okay.
And I'd eat.
Your favorite TV show? What did you do most, TV show or Netflix, and to start with? And what was your favorite thing?
Netflix. What was I watching last year? Oh, God. I watched so many
everything.
Things.
Everything. I think we all watched everything.
I watched everything.
Okay. So nothing stands out. It was mostly Netflix.
Nothing stands out. Okay. I was always on Netflix. Always. For the whole year, I was on Netflix.
And what did you wear the most that surprised you? Like, I live in this thing. Like, now it's time to change.
My tracksuits.
Of course.
At home, my tracksuits.
Oh, of course, of course.
We also have tracksuits in Mina, you know, like the hoodie and the nice warm trousers. Yeah, we make our own.
Oh, that's nice. I'm going to post some of our pictures on our Instagram once we're done here. And what is the one thing that you will remember about that period? Last question.
Oh my God, the anxiety of not knowing where are we going, what is happening to the world. That was something for the 2 weeks that really affected me. I was really worried, like, what is really happening? What's going to be our next step, especially being a mom and my life really depends on my work. So it was that. And then the light when I finally discovered Mina, and I was like, this is it. So what marks me the most last year was the anxiety that took me to launch my Mina baby.
Oh, all right. Shazia, thank you so much. This was so nice to see you. So nice to chat to you again. I know. I hope very soon, all of this will stop and we'll just like see each other again.
Yes, hopefully I'll come and visit you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Have a good day. Okay.
Have a good day.
Bye. Oh, okay. So I'm so excited. Thank you so much for allowing me to have this interview with you. I think it's more for me, actually, because I was so fascinated when I came across Eco Green, and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, like, this is just so interesting. And simply because I think you would agree that back in the day, you know, it was unheard of that you would meet a woman who's like running a recycle plant, you know? There were not a lot of those I think you're the first woman I've met. I know a guy, I know one male who's running one, but I've never really met women. So I was so excited. Can you hear me? Oh, you're muted.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. You were muted there. So that is what fascinated me about the whole request, because I thought I need to send a request and we chat about it, you know?
No.
But do you agree?
Yeah, it's actually...
Mm-hmm, you first.
Yeah. Yes, because I'm also feeling the heat, being the female, and then males, they think it's their industry. So, yeah, it gets tougher sometimes.
Wow. No, I think it's fascinating. So, tell us the story. How did you decide? What happened? There's always a story with everyone starting on, you know, these particular journeys.
Yes, there is actually. Okay, I was on a program. So this program was sponsored by a company called South 32. I'm not sure if you are aware. Mm-hmm. And then it was a leadership program where they were sponsoring our business management certificate. And then one of the requirements was the first 10 months you should have a registered business. And then I had to decide on what to do, because I wasn't going to go for tenders. I wasn't going to go for a business that will not continue to work. So I look around myself, I look around me, and then I look around my family as well, because...
Recording stopped.
And nobody can switch off your video. Okay, we can switch off the video.
Hi, Jessica. I am so sorry. I didn't check my data. And then I just went on an app and bought the data just now.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's switch off the videos then. It's fine. It's better.
Okay.
Okay, let me.
I'm so sorry.
No, don't start. Don't stress. Okay, I'm gonna play. I'm gonna record again, and then we start talking.
Recording in progress.
Okay. So yeah. So you were still explaining about how you got involved.
Okay. The main forces that actually pushes me to do recycling was my own family. You know, I come from a big family where unemployment rate is very high. So they used to collect waste, hire transport, and then go and send it to town. And then I decided, what if I bring this closer to them? By so doing, I'll be minimizing cost for their transports, and then I'll also create employment for them as I was still studying. And then actually, obviously, I was going to need someone who was going to be on site, do the work for me while I'm at school. And then I did my research. And then go for Department of Environmental Affairs, my municipality, and then they referred me to some people who are already doing it. So I went to them and did my own research, and then I saw that it was going to be beneficial to me and also to my family and also to my community. So doing recycling was a thing that I'm going to do because it is not a business that was going to be seasonal. It was not a business that was going to be affected so much by the fourth industrial revolution. And then it was a business that is going to be here even 10 years to come, because as long as we are alive, there is waste. So yeah, that was it. It was my family, my community, and also the interest that I found while I was doing my own research. And then I saw that this was an opportunity, and it was viable, it was visible. Yeah. Wow. So as I always say, my family is the main drive, and also my community, because without them, I wouldn't be where I am today, because it was all because of them. Everything, the access to waste, even the main idea itself, which was because of what they were doing. So I had to look around it and try to make it a business, a formal business, because they were just collecting, and then I had to change that and make it a business that can create employment, that can make my living much easier. And also, I had to do a business that was going to make me not regret resigning, because I resigned. I was with the Department of Justice, and then I resigned, went for the business management program, had to start my business. As you know, there are challenges, so nothing is guaranteed, but so far there are no regrets. Everything was worth it.
Wow. So within your family, then, who was already in the recycling business?
Oh, there's a lady by the name Nokubonga Mnyango. And then there are also ladies by Smangele and Samgelisiwe Chira. Those were two females that I met with. And then I went to their site, did my study, doing a partnership with Nokubonga Mnyango. But we are no longer now. She went on business alone, and then I stayed and do my business. She has been in the industry for, I think it's the 7th year, if I'm not mistaken.
So I love this idea about zero waste landfills. I think it's just so bold and so ambitious and just so audacious. Like, tell me how you came about the mission for Cook Green.
I lost you there.
Nampila?
No, no, to the
Nampila, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, okay. So now I was saying that I'll make it quick so that we don't get cut. I was saying that the omission about zero waste landfill, I thought it was so bold, so ambitious, and so audacious. Like, tell me how you came about that. Nampila, do you want to maybe move around a bit? I can't hear you.
Let me just find which one that.
Okay, can you hear me now? Okay, that's fine.
I think it's because I'm working from home. I just gave birth. As such, that is how I came on about it.
It's just so beautiful. I absolutely
and I said, no, what? Just... Yeah.
And then also, what sort of things do you guys recycle?
I only recycle domestic waste for now. It's only your cardboard. Your plastics, your plastic bottles, and your aluminium cans for now. But let's say I am at Nongoma because I actually go everywhere that I can go to access waste. And then when I get there, I had to take everything because, you know, they collect everything and then they separate it according to grades. And then if I just take three of them and then who's going to take the other one, you know, but... On my plan, that is what I'm more focused on, is the cardboard, plastic bottles, and aluminium cans. And then the rest, I'm only selling it locally just to keep my clients happy and actually saving the zero waste to landfill because everything is recyclable. And then I actually be able to take everything from them because I don't want them to divert from the whole vision that I have, which is zero waste to landfill.
Oh, I love that vision. It just literally, every time when I hear it, it just melts my heart. I just think it's just so audacious. It's just so beautiful. And do you normally come across clothing?
I do, but not more enough because, you know, I go to landfills and I go to my closer communities. So it's rare to come across clothing, but they are just that my people, they take it for themselves. It doesn't get to us as buyback centers.
Wow, that's interesting. I love that. That's so interesting that people actually just immediately take and I guess they would wear them or sell it.
And then they reuse. Yes, they reuse them, they sell it. It doesn't get to us, I won't lie. Even if we go there and we see that no, their clothes, they said no, that one is for us and our families. It doesn't even get to us.
Oh, it's so good to know that. Oh wow. So in your view, then do you, I mean, I'm sure you've been to lots of landfills, and in your view, so do you feel like South Africa, we have a problem with like garment waste, or it's more about plastic like as you said, domestic waste. We have more problem with domestic waste versus clothing and textile and fabrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, firstly, South Africa has a very strong recycling industry. Mm. That we would not lie.
Mm.
Looking into the industries that are actually assisting us, like Abopetco, Abopolico, the plastic companies.
Mm.
Because, you know, most cases is that plastic, they end up in our sea. They end up in our rivers, which affects a lot of things. Because our livelihood is more based on water. And then we actually source water from the sea, from the rivers. Mm. And then I think that is why the main focus has to be in plastic more than anything else, because that is the main challenge we are trying to resolve. Because, you know, I recycle plastic, every kind of plastic. I mean, your shopping plastics, I mean, your clear plastic, your red plastic, I do that.
Mm.
And even if I went on and search on internet, you'll find that plastics is the main concern.
Wow.
And even on Statical, they have stated that we have recycled 520,000 tons of plastic waste alone in 2018.
Wow.
Not mentioning other grades, but on plastics alone. So the clothing is not much on. But I have studied that they are actually trying to bring it on board.
Mm. Oh, wow. That's just so
they're trying to sell the idea to us of trying to see how are we going to recycle clothing.
Mm. Wow. And you
haven't spent much on that.
Oh, yeah. And so what do you think? What do you think people can do with the plastic issue? Like, in your view, where do you think we can start?
You know, the main thing to do is to actually practice separating at source, you know, separating at home.
Mm.
Because I also have this vision, you know, of starting with our primary schools, educating them on why and how, and then how is it going to benefit them if they are going to separate at source, separate at their houses, separate at school before it even reach the landfill? That is the only way, because if you can separate your own waste at your own house, it won't get to the road, to the other side of the drains, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a program which we are running here. I'm not sure if you are aware. It's a cab recycling. So we distribute yellow bags to my neighbors, and then on Wednesday, I collect these yellow bags, and already it's sorted. It's plastics alone, it's cardboard alone, it's everything separated according to their grades. So we educate them on how to separate, and then I go there, I collect.
Mm.
So we are trying to actually reduce, to actually make sure that we achieve the vision that says zero waste to landfill, because I believe if everything will start at home, we can actually be able to save our environment, to actually promote the recycling.
I agree. Yeah, it's just so. And so how does your day-to-day look like?
Oh, you know, my day-to-day It's a lot. What I can say is managing people alone, it's not a child's play, because we have different challenges every day, and I have to adapt to each and every person's situation so that my work will be out there, you know. So I have to do the paperwork. I have to do the calling. I call my clients. How did my guys treat you? Are you happy? Are you happy with my prices? And then just to get to know who goes to them and offer them something better than myself, because nowadays it's all about money. You will never find a person who will just give it to you free. Mm. They are selling waste to us now. They understand that we are making money.
Mm.
So my day-to-day is actually calling my clients, doing my paperwork, doing applications, doing interviews, having meetings.
Mm.
And then now that I just had a baby, I work from home. But still, it's like I'm at the office because I actually do everything that I normally do, even if I'm at the office.
Mm. And, you know, I think
then I also go to landfills. I also go to landfills. They know me. I also go to the communities that we serve. They know me as well. Sometimes I buy them lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I go to them and then we talk about life. Sometimes I go to schools, even though I haven't been much on that. I'm only doing research on how to actually get the idea to our teachers, to our principals, because it seems like they are all lacking information, you know, because I want to have access, you know, to teach our young people on how to do it. Why? Because I think with information, you can go anywhere, you know. That is where we are lacking. We have to. Kumele sibambe samile abathini umthento hlabu samile. Kumele sibambe kule ingane encane ukuze zizokhula nakho ukuthi kungani kumele siyenze lento esiyenzayo kahle kahle. Even though kuzoba ngemali ekugcineni, but ekugcineni kosuku wena ke as a person kukusiza ngani? Because into engiyifundile ukuthi siyayidinga imali, but ekugcineni kosuku kunezimo lapho khona imali ngeke isisize khona. Uyabo? Like masugula nje ugulisa udoti, imali yakho will not help you. So kunezinto lezo kumele sizame ukuzistressa kulezi ngane zethu ezincane ey'khulayo. Kwazi bani mhlawumbe zizokhula sezazi ukuthi no, njengamanje mina ekhaya siyaseparator at source. Kuphuma udoti seku-ready ukuthi kuya kuma-recyclers, akusayi lapha e-landfill.
I mean, I love also this whole idea that you know, what I love about your work is it's just so charity, like community involved, you know, and that's charity on its own. It's giving back, you know, so there's this beautiful chain where we are part of the evolution of nature in a way. Like we are helping clean out nature. We are helping or fast tracking or facilitating, whichever way one wants to look at that. It's not just a matter of, oh, you know, you have a recycling plant. It's just like it's so rooted in flushing out, you know, everything that is not needed on earth.
Yeah.
So
it's actually giving back, without actually having to have materialistic things. You know, we're just giving back by cleaning up the land. We have cleanup campaigns. We have workshops, recycling workshops. Yeah, we have a lot that we do, actually, for our communities.
So, okay, so let's talk about you then. So how has this rubbed off to, or like on you in terms of like your family life, your home life? Do you find that you are practicing more like sustainable habits within your home? No, I mean, I'm not judging. I'm always interested in hearing that. How does it also translate in our personal life? Because people always ask me, like, you know, I'm obviously talking about sustainable fashion the whole day. How does that resonate in my life? You know, so how does it manifest in your life?
Okay, firstly, I'd love to share with Mina. I was an intern at Department of Justice.
Yes.
And then when I got there, a lady was dismissed at work. So I worked on a position. And then when I saw this advert about business management, and then right there, it's like something happened to me because I hated my job.
Mm.
It was a formal job. It was a government job. But then from that moment, I hated everything about it because I wanted to be my own boss from forever. And then when I resigned, my manager asked me if I'm sure. And then also my family, they asked me, are you sure? You know, looking into the life that we are living, scarcity of job and all that. And then I said, no, I'm going to do this. I'm still young. It doesn't work, and then I still have time to actually pick myself up, take my certificates, and go look for a job. And then, you know, coming from a big family, sometimes they make jokes about my work. You left the office job, you go for West, you're opening dustbins and all that. And I'm like, okay, it's a job now. Even though I've employed them, I've got three of them working for me permanently, but still, they are laughing at me sometimes. So it has, I won't lie, you know, it has opened doors for me. More than anything, I have grown, both personally and also in corporate, I have grown. Because one thing that I said, I'm working with waste, but I'm making it formal.
Yeah.
You know, on my side, you will never find litter.
Yeah.
We are working with waste, but we are very clean. That is the main thing.
Mm.
You'll never find a paper laying down.
Mm. You're living, you are living the true philosophy of you know, of cleaning, of flushing out. I think that's the word that keeps coming to my mind. Mm.
Yes, and because, and I do visit plants where they're actually doing the whole processing. And I won't lie, sometimes it hurts because they are so not hygiene.
Mm.
It's dirty. It's actually bad. You know, even though I'm not on the processing as yet, but I do the study and visit the plants because the vision is bigger than what I am now. So I want to change a lot, man. It should be clean. It should be good. You know, when I go out, people they don't say that I do waste because I'm always on point. I dress up for the event, and then when I'm on site as well, I'm on my working suit, and I'm not dirty, but I do go to landfills. There's nothing that I don't know on site. I know everything from sorting, from collecting, from a dustbin. I know how it feels.
Yeah.
And then from attending a meeting that is formal, I know that. From going to landfill and engage with those guys who stays in landfill from 7 to 5. I know how it feels. I know how the standard lights you when you are there.
Gosh.
But still, that doesn't change me.
Yeah.
You know, even that. On my heels, when the meeting is done, and then I just take my refuse back, I collect my plastic bottles. It's just my life.
It's
who I am. And I am so happy with everything. Just that I want to move to the next step now.
Mm.
And then I'm happy. I have grown. I have grown. I won't lie. Because now I'm working with my man and he is 100% on it. So, what else?
Wow. Are you planning to open more? Do you think you open more recycling plants?
Yeah. Relocating, you know, in recycling you have to stay. That I won't lie. Richards Bay now is too small for us because it's like everyone wants to tap into the market and the place is too small for us now. So we have to stay. And I did test the market because I went to Ulundi and then I recruited those guys to work under me. And it happened. I also want a place where I can have the plants. Like a branch, you know, because the main idea, the main goal is actually to processing of plastic, to do, to wash plastic than what we are doing now. And that is the second step in recycling because we are the first step now.
So Nompilo,
I
then
want to do more.
So sorry to jump in. So Nompilo, I keep hearing in my head that someone probably doesn't know or they're wondering, then how does it work? Like, then what do you do with the plastic? What do you do with the cardboard? What do you, once you guys have collected them, what is the next process?
Mm-hmm. Okay, what we do is we buy already sorted waste. We don't sort on site now. But I started collecting everything unsorted, you know. But then now that I'm buying, I'm opening a space for someone to collect and sort and then send to me. Okay, we are buying already sorted, and then we bale. We are using a machine called baling machine, and that machine compresses
everything.
It's in.
Wow.
So bundles processing, like for instance, our cardboard, we are selling it to Sapi. And
amazing.
Then our plastic bottles, we are selling it to Daranfa Chemical Fiber. They are in Johannesburg. They are actually making the fiber. You know, your pillows.
Yes.
That's inside thing. Yes, they are making it out of plastic bottles. And then Sapi, of course, is creating another cardboard.
Wow.
And then for plastics, we are selling to it's abroad for plastic. We're selling to anyone though.
Yeah.
We haven't found a straight market for plastic because everyone is doing plastic. It's like the market has picked up on plastics.
Yeah.
So everyone is buying money. Plastic. Yeah.
And in so okay, I want to go back to one more question and then close. But I want to go back to this whole idea about it sounded like, you know, there's still this stereotypical way of how people look at people who have or who work in the landfills or who run such businesses, mm-hmm. that there's this stereotype that we have or we carry that we think, oh, like people don't understand it yet. They just think they frown upon or they look down on that job. Do you still find that?
Yes, a lot. But unfortunate enough, not to me. You know,
yes,
people
just generally.
Look at me and say, this one is a boss, you know. But for me, those people in landfill, they are my bosses.
Mm.
Because without them, I don't have a job.
Mm.
You know, I respect them. And when they decided not to sell to you, you feel it.
Yeah.
They know they are being looked down. So people, you know, those people, they are self-employed. One thing for sure that I tell people is that those people are self-employed.
So we call
them, decide on their paycheck.
They call them street surfers, ne? Those are the guys that normally on the road and they're carrying everything and pulling plastic. They're street surfers. Mm-hmm. I read a very interesting article about how they are single-handedly changing our lives.
Mm-hmm. They do. You know, I have a project. Just that this guy, I'm not sure whether he scammed me or what, because he was supposed to finish my trolleys. I have requested Petco to sponsor me with trolleys, and they did. We paid the guy, and then the guy didn't finish the job. I made trolleys for these guys. The waste pickers that they go in town. But I work closely with them. So I buy the Lama trolleys where they collect using my own trolleys.
Mm.
And then they come and sell to me on CPDs at town. And then I collect my trolleys, I go put them in the office. In the morning, they take the trolleys and then they bring it back. So this guy is actually delaying my plan. I'm trying to elaborate on your point that they are changing our lives. So that is why I'm trying to make it easier for them not to take the Shoprite checkers trolley and then now Shoprite has a problem. No. I have created trolleys for them specifically for what they want to do.
Wow. Nompilo, you're amazing. Like literally, yeah, you're just incredible. Like, oh, I love stories like this. It just goes to show we can all do something and we can all play a part. And it doesn't have to be that deep. Like there's just... this, you know, it's just a matter of really, I guess, self-introspection in terms of where do you want to place yourself and make an impact, you know?
Yeah.
What is the lesson that you've learned out of doing this, out of your day job, out of living this life, out of carrying such honor, you know, for all of us? What is the lesson you've learned?
The lesson that I've learned is that, you know, the vision must be bigger than yourself, actually.
Oh.
The reason you started must be big enough. Oh. It should be big enough. It should be enough, you know, for you to carry on, for you to actually take it all in, you know, the challenges, the backstabbing, the stigma. It should be enough for you to wake up every day and go face these people, you know, and go face the world and go do what you want to do. So it's all about your vision. It's all about your idea. It should be enough because I can assure you, if your idea is not big enough, if it is not valid enough, you won't last. Because this industry, man, they will tell you.
Mm. Oh.
They will eat you alive.
I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you. I absolutely loved our conversation, and I'm hoping that we will cross paths and do something together, charity work, anything in sustainability. I think it's just we just need to change the world.
Yes. We just need to do it. and it's doable.
It's doable. It's doable. Thank you, Nompilo. And I'll catch you soon.
Thank you so much. Hey, thank you so much.
Recording in progress.
Thank you.
Bye.
Recording stopped.
Bye.
So ladies, once again, thank you so much. I think it's going to be a very interesting conversation for people, particularly who, especially now, because we are all looking forward to 2022 and everybody's hoping it's going to be a better year than 2021. But I think in terms of, you know, just like in the fashion horizon, what's happening, I think we are slowly moving towards this whole idea of trends and people want to find themselves. I think COVID has, you know, showed us how we can survive with so little, you know? So, yeah. But anyway, so in terms of, let's start with how you compiled the report. Is it something that you do every year, just to set the scene for people who may not know? Is it something that lists compiles every year? And how long does it take? And how do you gather your data?
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit about this. So we do a yearly report. Every year we do a conscious fashion report and we analyze our data and the insights. But this year we wanted to do something different. So instead of being more industry focused, we wanted to collaborate really closely with creatives and designers. And that's what we did. We identify these movements in the conscious fashion space, and we also work together with creatives to kind of showcase their work and their ideas.
Okay. And so how different is this one from the one you did last year? What are some of the things that you're finding that this one, I don't know, highlighted?
What is really interesting is that the fashion, like the consumers, the users, fashion lovers, they are getting very knowledgeable, and they know what to look for. They want to know a lot about how fashion is produced, about materials. So there is now getting very specific. So they're looking for lots of biodegradable clothes, plant-based, just moving on from, you know, just vegan, because vegan can involve plastic. So users are getting very, very knowledgeable.
Yeah, and I'd probably add, like, I think for us, we obviously have like 140 million shoppers every year coming to the site. So we have really, really rich data. And also this has been around about 10 years. So we kind of every year are seeing an evolution. And I guess to Brenda's point, it's almost a sophistication in people's understanding. So going from search terms that might be kind of very broad to very specific things, which I think we cover in the report. So people not just looking for the term vegan, but actually looking for specific materials. So it's been amazing, like what we've seen over 10 years, how much customers are getting a lot more insightful.
So interesting. And so in terms of, let's dive into the report. So in terms of the report, it seems like movements, you know, fashion activism, movements around fashion, they're getting louder and louder. And I'm wondering, why do you think that is the case? And what is the impact that you think will have? Do you think movements are shifting the landscape? Brenda, you can take it.
Okay. Well, we based the movements that we included in the same as Norm was saying about the data that we collect. So when we see shifts and changes in those consumer habits, then we follow almost those pieces of information, and then we arrive into these movements. Mm. But yeah, that's the interesting thing as well, is that they are all about ideas, and they represent different ways that sustainable fashion can be put in practice. Mm. So there are different ways to be sustainable in fashion, and these movements show that that's the case, and that people, for different people, come in different things, and we wanted to do the report around these different points of view and ideas, basically.
And I think it's true that as certain movements have, especially the past 2 years, which has been really very different to anything else we've seen before, as movements have risen, whether it is the conversation around sustainability or Black Lives Matter, things like that, you do see it influencing shopping trends and people becoming more conscious. So we see a direct correlation.
Yeah, and also Nomfundo, I think I found it also very interesting, particularly I think for someone like you and me, who we grew up with pre-order as well. I'm jumping to pre-order. We grew up with pre-order, and I'm sure, you know, most communities as well. But as Africans, I think we remember how many times we had to take things to be fixed, things to be repaired, things to be mended. So it's so interesting how all of a sudden it's becoming a buzzword. And I'm just like, what? How is that manifesting itself? Like, how is, like, in terms of the report, what was interesting about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how the things of old are coming back in fashion, and the drive is a little bit different. So, I mean, I think obviously in communities like SA, I remember, like, if you go into a wedding, you have to go and, you know, you go to a tailor and you pre-order and everything's made just to you. And a part of it is just, for us in our community, might have been a question of scale. So for small designers and things like that, you don't want to invest in a lot of materials before you know that you actually have the order or the client. Mm. But there's a sustainability impact as well. So I think brands who maybe could scale up and mass produce a lot of products, I think, like, one of the examples we have is Telfar, which is huge amount of demand and has grown a lot over the past few years. But they're still choosing to do it on an order basis because it's just way more sustainable. So for them, it might not be about financial constraints necessarily, but it's about thinking more consciously about what you're making. But yeah, a lot of these new trends, it's things we've seen before, but it's just that the reason behind it is now different than in the past.
Yeah, I found it very interesting, this whole link between how convenient in the space of pre-order. It's almost as if, like, it's no longer seen as convenient, because some people see getting things repaired or mended in terms of convenience, but how all of a sudden that is shifting towards sustainability, you know? So just that interesting, intricate link that you would think it's just convenience, just take it to someone else to fix it, but actually not. Yeah, it's that landscape has changed.
But I think in the West, it's been quite different. For a lot of people with fast fashion, it was more convenient just to buy another cheap pair of jeans than repairing, right? And I think because people were not conscious of the potential waste and the impact, I think there was a behavior where people would just buy another one, especially because you had a lot of very cheap fashion. But I think now the trends with consciousness is maybe spend a bit more upfront. And the thing is, if you've spent a bit more, you probably are more likely to want to invest in repairing, for example. But yeah, no, you're right. I think these behaviors, they're not, not all of them are necessarily new. It's just that they're coming back with the new light.
And something that is also was interesting that is not necessarily new, that is coming back louder and louder, is this whole idea about connecting with your clothes and loving your clothes, you know, loving what you wear. And so I saw in the report, you're reporting this whole idea of consumers wanting to be more spiritual in terms of how they care for their clothes, in terms of how they connect with their clothes. Do you want to share more on that in terms of how it's manifesting itself. Brenda, you can take that.
Yeah, we saw that there are lots of interest in, you know, talisman jewelry, crystals, energetic things. So I think after the pandemic, there was this search for comfort, for almost like protection from accessories, jewelry, things that you're wearing. So it's just, it can be, fashion can be a great source of solace and comfort. So, and I think it also links to that idea that if you take care of your environment, you take care, you live in a more intentional way, and then you really kind of put intention in everything you do. There's say dressing sustainable or buying sustainable, then it means that it's also, it has a spiritual dimension, and that you're living intentionally in the same sort of wave as the planet. And you know, like, I think more and more people are, they want to live that way, and they want to make choices that they follow that intention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Nomfundo, do you think that COVID has fast-tracked this whole idea of mindfulness, or we were eventually leading up to that? Because all of a sudden, all of us, we are, you know, we're wanting more. We're wanting to connect to something else. We want to be, I think, more earthy, you know, in how we do things. And I'm wondering if you take the pandemic out, and where we eventually going to connect with that energy, or is it just COVID has made us realize, no, we were on a treadmill?
So good. Yeah, I mean, I suspect that. So I think, like, if I think long term, there has been a trend towards mindfulness. And if I think about things like just a conversation of mental health, I think even before COVID was a much bigger conversation. Workplaces, like, I know at least we'd had a whole program trying to look after employee mental health. I know apps like Calm and things like that have been doing really well for a long time. So it's been there, but I do think you're right. Like, with what happened with COVID, the past couple of years, especially a lot of young people have had to face death, maybe a lot more people that you know have passed where you maybe hadn't seen that before. The whole world has had to confront death. So even if it wasn't personal, every day you were looking at a death toll, which was just utterly depressing. So, and anecdotally, I know somebody who works at a company that does life insurance, and they just saw so much surge in demand during this time of people actually contemplating their life, death, everything. So I think that has contributed a lot to a rise in that consciousness. But I think one of the things the brand team saw as well, Brenda put in the report, was around TikTok as well. So I think on the young side, there's also been a rise in people sharing information, especially about crystals and mythology and things like that. So I think the combination of pandemic, but also being at home and social media tools, people sharing this type of information, I think that's helped to kind of see a rise in this this trend.
And I think it was also interesting that the list report didn't touch anything on a return to work. Was there a particular reason? Because I think that's what everybody's talking about now. But I know it's not necessarily a trend, but I feel like perhaps it could have taken that as well into account to say, but what about, you know, this landscape about everybody going back to work? How is it going to look like? Unless if you're secretly working on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe Brenda can speak to it, because I think we've got our kind of flagship report at LIST is a LIST index. And I think there we capture a lot more of the global generic fashion trends. And I think we've done some work around return to work. But in conscious fashion, I don't think there wasn't necessarily a direct link on that. But I think, Brenda, you were sharing some of the insights that you found on that, right?
Yes, well, we saw, right, Nom said that in other reports we have analyzed that return to work and how it's going to look like. And we saw that at the same time, we have this comfort, the search for comfort and comfortable clothes, and no restrictive clothes. Mm. But we have the desire to dress up, and we call it dopamine fashion. We want this rush of positivity from fashion. So it's these two things that are emerging. And especially with the hybrid model going to work, that's what we have at least at the moment. We do a few days in the office, a few days at home. So you have this mix of kind of dress up items like a blazer or some nice shirts or a cashmere jumper, but worn, we can wear it with sneakers or with like elevated joggers. So this is what people are actually looking. There's like this mix of things that they appear to be kind of opposites, but they are now working together.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen in general much more casualization of the workplace going forward. In our data, we're still seeing the casual wear, sportswear still doing really well. I think everyone thought once we opened up, those categories would fall. They haven't. And we haven't seen necessarily the other categories that drop, let's say ties and suits. We're not necessarily seeing a sharp increase. So it does tell us that the workplace isn't going back to what it was. And anecdotally, I'm in the List offices today, and we are in the City of London. And people dress a lot differently. So City of London is a lot of bankers, and a lot of people have told me their workplaces, they maybe only used to do casual Fridays, but they've kind of applied that policy now every day. So we are seeing this much more casualization of workplace attire.
And so then I know that you, in the report, you mentioned that working with designers, that you have picked, and that you're seeing these trends in terms of sustainability, how they're channeling it and they're channeling the movement. Are you linking it to the workwear? Are you seeing them as well creating collections that will suit like this new space that we're moving into?
Hmm. Yeah, I think they have. I think they, the designers that we spoke with, the base scene is a lot of them is about innovation. Hmm. So that's what drives the brands and their work. This like basically innovation and how to like creativity through sustainability. Hmm. So I think. Probably there's now more, you know, less experiment with social, the change of social roles at the same time as experimenting with materials. I think fashion is in a very interesting moment where people are kind of trying to figure out what happened and how society has changed. And sometimes it's quite telling how sometimes fashion can tell more about society changes than actual analysts. Mm-hmm. So you can see that some of the collections, without kind of articulating in a very, very obvious way, but you see things that they kind of almost kind of advancing in that way, kind of they absorb what's happening in society and they produce something. And that is how amazing how fashion can do that. So it would be really interesting to see these collections in February, what they're doing, what the proposals are, and see. Because I remember just before the pandemic, there were some designers like Marine Serre that they proposed masks. They were kind of putting, even before we had anything about the pandemic, they were already kind of putting masks on the catwalk. And that's no one could have, you know, foreseen that. Yes. But sometimes fashion kind of has this this way of seeing things that they are in the air, and they cannot explain it, but they do it. So yeah, I think it would be a good way to see how society has changed looking at fashion collections. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the designers then in length. So what I'm wondering then, what, when I was reading the report, what is it that they're doing right in, you know, versus the brands that I haven't jumped on board yet? What are some of the things that stand out? I know you mentioned innovation, for example. that makes them feel that makes them be on track in terms of where sustainability is leading. If you could share more on that, Nomfundo.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really such a cool selection of designers that that we were able to identify. I think one, the smaller brands are able to take a lot more risk, and that's what we see, and are able to experiment a bit more. So they are often a little bit earlier when it comes to new materials, for example, or new processes and ways of working with their customers. They kind of, they don't have the legacy that a lot of the larger brands have, or the more, in let's say, brands that have been around longer. They are able to experiment more, take a bit more risk, and that's what we see in the report. Just really cool new ways of thinking about fashion, right? So I think they have that on their side, and then I think a lot of the times they might be closer to the trends themselves, so rather than a big corporate, so they're kind of seeing what their community of other creatives, what their generation, let's say it's Gen Z, how they're thinking about things. So they're a little bit more, and I guess a bit to Brenda's point, intuitive and closer to the trends. So I think that's where we see this creativity that's been born and the innovation. It's they're able to take risks and they're creative and they're more in tune than let's say some of the other players.
Yeah, because it is very, I think, challenging for big brands to, you know, obviously fully transition into sustainability 100%. Do you feel like the small brands versus the big brands, do you feel like the gap is huge? Do you feel like the big brands will eventually catch up, or it will be a segment of the business where they are doing sustainability very well, environmental sustainability very well, and, you know, the other sides of business will just have to, I guess, continue as per normal?
Yeah, that's such a big question. Like, it's hard to know. Obviously, the past week, we've had this COP26 conference happening in Glasgow. So a lot of big major companies have been making commitments in fashion to either being carbon neutral by 2030. We're seeing a lot of, like, what does look really genuine commitments by some of the larger players. I think of Kering as one to commit to sustainability. What I suspect might happen is you'll have those who have already started and are on the journey, that will have some of them who do really phenomenally well and are able to pivot to the point where, you know, sort of all of their lines have thought through the sustainability impact a lot. But you're also going to have those players who just fall behind. And I think as customers care more, as governments make regulations, you know, eventually we'll have the bigger players sort of move that direction. And we're already seeing it. So I don't think it's a case of necessarily that the small players are going to take over per se. I think they're going to be driving the innovation, some of the risk-taking, and experimenting, but we are also seeing that in some of the key, we're seeing some leaders basically in the big firms. I don't want to make it seem like it's only these small brands who are pushing forward. Like, we're actually seeing some of the big brands take a big lead. And the thing with the big brands is that we do need them. Like, we need these brands to push this agenda forward, because it can have massive impact, right? Because they, for example, if you think of let's say a large denim producer, how much cotton they order, right? So if they start making sure everyone in their supply chain is organic, it's all organic cotton, for example, mm-hmm. that has a huge impact on the whole industry. Suddenly the price of organic cotton could get a lot cheaper, which again helps young designers coming up. So it's kind of a system that works, that's intertwined, and we're seeing really good progress, or at least good commitments on some of the big companies, and then a lot of the innovation and progress as well being made by young designers.
Mm. It's just so interesting. It's just gonna, especially with, I mean, this whole COVID thing, it's going to be interesting to see how everybody else pivots, taking, you know, global warming to account, environmental sustainability into account and all those things, and how they went to fast track and how everybody's still going to collaborate and work towards, because it, at the end of the day, it is a community work, right? So all of us, we need to be caring for our planet and we want better. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of us align. And so therefore, in closing, then I would like each of you just to explain to the listener, like, what does this report, what does it mean for LIST? You know, why is it important that you do it? Why is it important that you share, you know, these insights? Brenda?
Well, we were really keen on exploring ideas, as I said before, and give a platform to new designers that they were doing interesting things. We wanted to showcase the fresh energy in sustainable fashion. Mm-hmm. And and we wanted to support every person that wants to do or is interested in sustainable fashion, that wants to dress sustainably. We wanted to show that they are kind of all these different ways of doing it. And we also think it's a very big part of the fashion conversation at the moment, which is something that needs to be, you know, talked about. So yeah, that's the main reasons in terms of elaborating the report. But Noam can tell you a little bit more about more of a, like, a company level. And
Yeah, no, definitely. I think from the org side, like, this is something really internally we're really passionate about, sustainability. And the thing with the LIST is, so we are this big global fashion platform, but we actually don't own any inventory. We don't manufacture, we don't ship or deliver items ourselves. Mm-hmm. So in terms of, as a company, when we think about how we can make impact, one piece of it is definitely this, is like helping to share insights on what's happening in the market and try to kind of influence the industry by sharing what's happening and where the trends are moving. And then also through this report, obviously, we get to platform and showcase some brands that we think are leading and doing a phenomenal job. So it's a piece of sort of how we're looking at and playing our part. But also there's a lot of other things in the pipeline that we're working on in terms of consumer side, trying to help make sure that our platform can help consumers make the best choice as well. So it's an ongoing thing, but I would say something as an organization, we're passionate and committed to kind of playing our part in making the industry more sustainable.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I enjoyed reading it, and you know, I'm going to read some of the themes out loud for our listeners, just so that they know some of the themes that we didn't touch on. The ones that we spoke about, these are the ones that stood out for me, but I'm sure everybody else is wondering what else is still, you know, is in the report. So I will do that. And I just, you know, just as parting, just any last few words that we would like to share. It's holiday season. What is the LIST woman and man will be looking like? And yeah.
I'll leave this one for Brenda.
But yeah, actually, we are starting to see people looking for sort of party wear, bits of party wear, like, I don't know, knit, lurex, knit, knitted items, yeah. Or, you know, like, things that they can be, that are not kind of only, like, you know, party dresses and stuff, things that they can be a little bit more versatile. Mm-hmm. But with they starting, I think people have a big, they, as I said before, they have a big desire to dress up and enjoy and you know, and be kind of enjoying fashion. Like, that's what they kind of, they stayed at home for so long. Now they want to see all the people that they matter to them. So, and they want to celebrate. And then you can see that there is this thing that not kind of a sort of frivolous, well, I think, it's not the right word, but no kind of just a party dress is like things that they kind of make them feel good. That, as I said, like nice knitted top, like things with kind of embellishment, you know, that sort of, that just positive, that brings positivity.
Feel good. I don't see knitted wear in SA in December.
No, but it's too hard. We'll lift it for you guys. It's way too hot. Thank you so much. Till we meet in London, and now that we can all travel, and yeah, so we're all looking forward to just moving around and enjoying ourselves and connecting with all our favorite places. So thank you so much for your time, and yeah, until we meet again.